Welcome to this roundtable on finding your first job in cardiothoracic surgery. I'm surrounded by outstanding experts in this topic, and my name is Vinay Badwar from West Virginia University in Morgantown, West Virginia. And I'm surrounded by great colleagues here, John Economides from University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, Damien LaParr from Columbia University in New York, Gabriel Luhr from Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, and Rishi Reddy from University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. And today we're going to cover a couple of general categories in this topic. One is answering the looming question, well, is there really jobs left in CT surgery? And then talk about maybe how one finds the job and how accessing resources, and then what are people that are hiring, what are they looking for? And how do you interact and be successful in that first job search? So to start, there's an ongoing question about demand power and the rhetoric of, well, in cardiac surgery, for example, everything's being done by catheters now. It might be even applicable to congenital in some degree. And so when a resident is going into the specialty and wondering about this, how do we answer that question? And do we have data? John? Can you discuss this, maybe?
Thank you, Vinay. Yes, I would say the short answer to the question is that I'm incredibly enthusiastic for young trainees now that are considering a career in cardiothoracic surgery. I don't think that there's been a better time to consider a career in this specialty in a long while. While it is true that that cardiac surgery is moving towards minimally invasive approaches and that there are percutaneous interventions that continue to advance and continue to eat away, if you will, at our book of sort of clinical business. Practically from the day that Andreas Grunzig described balloon angioplasty, doctors have been saying that cardiac surgery and cardiothoracic surgery is a dying specialty.
Yeah.
And we continue to do well and we continue to flourish. And so I don't put a lot of stock in those assertions that the advancement of minimally invasive therapies is going to compromise us. I don't think it will. From the standpoint of manpower, at the turn of the millennium, there was interest in this, looking at the age of currently practicing cardiothoracic surgeons and the prospect for their retirement and the prospects for filling those gaps with jobs. And projections back in 2002, 2003 suggested that by the year 2020, a sufficient number of surgeons would have retired that would not be offset by the number of residents that we graduate each year, such that there could be a deficiency of 1,500 or 2,000 surgeons. And at that time, an American College of Surgeons survey was performed, which showed that cardiothoracic surgery was in fact the oldest practicing specialty, with 11% of surgeons greater than 70 years of age and 60% greater than 55. And at the time of the writing of our most recent manpower survey in 2014, still over 50% of surgeons are over 55. Now, we've had a couple of economic downturns since those projections, which have compelled these surgeons to stay on even longer. But now we're in a position where they're starting to retire and starting to leave, and the job market is tremendous.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. Our manpower survey and our own data has shown that there's lots of surgeons now retiring. The economic downturn has come about, and so more and more jobs are being opened up, not just in adult cardiac, but a ton in thoracic, and even in some cases in congenital. So it's a very important time. Rishi, you've been involved in this for some time, and how do we start telling our colleagues that are in residency now what resources to pick to find that first job? How do you go about it?
So I've been advising residents and fellows for the last 10 years in terms of how to go about this process, and I think my main message has been to communicate broadly to everybody that they've ever worked with as when they were in med school, as a resident, or any other trainee level, to try and broaden your network to find out about job postings. Many of the jobs in our field have traditionally been word of mouth, and so you really have to talk to everybody you know to try and hear about things. Most jobs will get posted on places like CTSNet. There are other opportunities or other websites like LinkedIn, Glassdoor, Indeed, Monster, which now are listing cardiac and cardiothoracic job postings. But usually the word of mouth is the best way to hear about them and where you're going to hear about positions earlier rather than later.
And as a division leader or department chair, we look for specific people in hiring that first job. Gabe, you're a little bit more developed, but you've been recently in that market and looking for that first job. What are the steps that you took to find that first job? How did you know about the job that you're looking for, and how were you initially successful in that process?
Yeah, thanks. I definitely agree with the stats. I think there is a shortage that's always been in our benefit, but it was scary going through it. It was around 2013 when I did it, but it was very vivid. It basically, word of mouth is one, CTSNet is another. You're coming out fresh, so you're a junior, and you have to kind of put yourself in hiring folks' shoes, say, what can you offer? That's where I think taking a step back and even your fellowship training has to be very solid and to some degree broad, to some degree towards the end a little bit niche focus, so that you have something to add to an existing practice. And I felt that very vividly my last year in Cleveland, where I was already sensing that heart failure and lung failure was important, and so was definitely capitalizing on training with heart transplant, lung transplant. Basically, I went through those different avenues, but then also developed an Excel sheet of all the programs that were in the country, really, and then went through that Excel sheet and compiled emails, and then sent out my resume to various emails very early. I did it at the beginning of my last year. In fact, it may have been at the end of my second year, actually. So the earlier, the better, I think. I used conferences like this to meet some folks, and I never turned down an interview, never. Like, even if it was something that I didn't think was reasonable or that I was ready for or something I wasn't interested in, I still went. I went on, like, I think maybe 10 or 15. And the reason why, I just prepared you for other interviews and also gave you a little bit of bargaining power, too, because certain, smaller practices make very good offers, et cetera. So I think that's how I approached it. In the end, you go back to your mentors and get advice, and you make a decision.
Well, that's great. I mean, being organized and approaching it like you would any operation, get organized and get yourself there. That's excellent. Damien, what about for you in terms of having leadership in the TSRA and advising residents, being one, and now finding your first job? Are there unique aspects overall that you can bring, but also maybe some special things for congenital?
Yeah, I think, I would echo a lot of what Rishi and Gabe had said, that I don't think you can start too early in this process. And that's what I try and often counsel a lot of the residents, medical students, and fellows that I talk to at this point, was engaging early in the field and engaging with mentors and different folks at meetings like Gabe mentioned, is critical. I also found that when you were going through the process of applying, whether regardless of stage, whether you're a medical student applying for a general surgery residency or a general surgery resident applying for a fellowship, using the contacts that you've made during that process and following up on those over the years is oftentimes very critical in identifying not only job opportunities, but also building that relationship that may ultimately end up resulting in a job for yourself. And in fact, that was an experience that I had and helped me get my first job. And so I think that understanding that aspect of things and not, just as Gabe said, never letting an interview go by, I think that if, medical students and general surgery residents almost view every interaction that they have with faculty at these meetings or if somebody comes to Grand Rounds as a visiting professor, viewing those interactions as potential interviews, I think that's a great mindset to have. I do think that, as you mentioned, the congenital job market, the classic adage that you're going to hear the minute you say congenital to almost anybody is, well, there's no jobs. And I don't think that's the case. The job market is tight. They're limited. It's a smaller, more specialized field. But I think, as you mentioned at the intro, the job market has been opening up and more jobs are becoming available, especially within the past 2 years. So I think my advice for folks interested in congenital is engage even earlier and engage often. Identify and take the counsel of your mentors. And identify the opportunities that you can to start to engage with congenital mentors and true folks that know the landscape. I think it's probably the best thing I would do.
We are in such a small specialty, and as you come to these meetings, you get a chance, and you're very fortunate to get to know almost everybody. Mm-hmm. And so it's such a small world, and that's really good advice to our early careerists to try to engage and have that mentor help you.
Yeah.
And that's what we're all here for. We all want to have our young surgeons graduating to find a job, be successful. There's so many resources within the STS now, including the Workforce on Career Development, that is focused solely on being successful at launching one's career. John, as one that sharing our roles in hiring a lot of surgeons, there's a specific timeline that I deal with, and maybe I'll get your input, that if it's a July 1st start, and if a surgeon is coming from outside of one state, that's a three-month process. And if the three-month process starts there, 3 months before that, contracts and things should be secure. I'm looking to kind of settle something. And then the interview process starts. So what Gabe and Damian and Rishi have already said, that timeline, does that make sense for how you approach it as well?
I would agree, Vinay. I would say that it's a 6 to 7 month process with a first interview, second interview, contract negotiations, and then dotting the I's and crossing the T's with regards to getting certifications and so forth, and medical licenses and privileges and everything else. The process. I think that Gabriel's point about starting early is very important, and I think towards the end of your second penultimate year of training, you should be thinking about what you want to do, where you want to do it. And again, I really must say it's just such a great time because you really can decide where you want to work in most cases, because there's just so much opportunity available in the country. And hit it pretty hard from the outset and try and nail some of these things down early. And make it so much easier when you get there that, you know, if the only thing that you need to do is just get your training in your electronic medical record, that would really help you hit the ground running. Which honestly, I just recently made a transition to UNC, and that was the rate limiting step for me was getting my electronic medical record status. So you want to get all of that stuff out of the way, and it actually looks good. It's actually the first thing that you can do to impress your employer is that from the moment you sign a contract, to be really forthcoming and very task oriented with regards to getting all of the certification and licensure done, so that you can start when you say that you signed a contract that you could start.
So that's very helpful. So for our early careers that are watching this, or mentors that are looking to help their colleagues, what are you looking for in the ideal partner, the ideal first year graduate to join your department or division? And I'll open up for open discussion for everyone.
So, you know, the specialty, especially for me in academics, is I'm generally going to be interested in somebody who wants to develop a niche area and has expertise in a niche area. So I wouldn't necessarily be looking to hire a sort of all-around cardiothoracic surgeon, but I would be interested in a thoracic surgeon that brings a specific skill set to the table that's deficient in my institution, or the same for cardiac or even pediatrics. And I would start the process that way. The basic things that we're interested in are an excellent record from the standpoint of training, excellent word of mouth from mentors and supervisors, and as you mentioned, it's a small community and we basically know everybody. And most of the time, our colleagues will be pretty forthcoming with regards to the strengths and weaknesses of potential candidates. And then in the individual, you know, you want somebody who you think would be hardworking, who would be collegial, who would be collaborative, who would represent the division or department very well, and provide the sort of service that would be required to attract referrings and keep them, you know. So, I think at interviews, you know, you would expect an individual like this to be sort of humble, be be collegial and express interest and follow up with you afterwards with the interview and sort of things like that. Give you the impression that individual would be a good fit for the partners that you already have in your division.
Excellent. Rishi, we've talked about this also. What are your thoughts on how to be an engaging interview candidate and from the perspective of interviewing, but also receiving that information?
I think the good fit is the key. I think sometimes our new trainees don't understand the investment that everyone here knows that it takes to recruit someone new. And so it is a huge investment in terms of both time, financial, and so you're really looking for a good long-term fit. I think most programs are looking at this like a marriage. You're looking for someone who is going to be part of your group for years, if not decades. And so really, for the trainee standpoint, understanding what their goals are, where do you want to live, what kind of job do you want to do, is it going to be academic, more private practice, what are the day-to-day responsibilities? I think if you have a good sense of that, that helps guide your job search. I think the other thing that was just mentioned is the job market now is so different than it was 10 years ago, and in such a good way. There are a lot more opportunities geographically. You can look at where you want to go and what the opportunities are. So I think if you spend the time up front investing to figure out what you want, it'll really help your job search.
So Gabe, you just mentioned earlier about how you organized yourself to find the job. What happened after the interview? How did you seal the deal? How did you convince others, or they just automatically knew you were the right fit? How did you define that yourself, and how did you communicate that?
Yeah, it was tough because the job market, I think, is even better now. It wasn't bad then. There were a lot of options. It started to boil down a little bit to geography and also so for me it was mentorship. So I felt like I think a sense that when folks hire someone straight out of training, they're going to invest in them to some degree. They're going to mentor that individual, and if that's not there, then it's unclear how successful somebody can be. So part of that was factored in, but I would say at the end of the day there were about a 4 or 5 opportunities that were fairly similar, but I felt like the mentorship aspect of it was very important, and then I would let them know that was something I was very interested in going to that particular institution, wrote back to them, went a second time and visited and just really showed interest in the program.
And Amy, what advice can you give our residents, mm-hmm. having been on both sides now, on how do you interact, how do you communicate? Being on the receiving end, mm-hmm. it's very good, as Gabe just said, to know that you've got a very interested party, mm-hmm. because we interview a lot of people, and then you have to make some choices. So how would you approach that?
Well, I would say, I think, first off, to kind of piggyback a little bit off of some of the comments that you had made, I think being the candidate when you're out there interviewing, I think it's very critical, and what I found was very important, is you've got to articulate a plan. You've got to articulate a need and how you're going to fill that need. And I think that you have to understand exactly if there is a practice area, or if there's a gap, or if there is a reason that you're being interviewed, and what the needs of the program that are interviewing are. You have to figure out how you're going to fit into that plan and whether you're going to address that. And when you do, then you need to clearly articulate that in academics, with research. I think you have to articulate to the person that's interviewing how you're going to continue to move the field forward. So you have to have a plan, and you need to clearly articulate that, I think, and I think that will help make the conversation easier. In terms of communicating your interests, this is an opportunity in anybody's career to where they should be shy about that. I think when there's a job that is going to be a good fit for you, just like Rishi said, it's like a marriage. If you feel like this is the right program for you and it's going to be successful for them and for you, then I think you need to be aggressive about communicating that, and you need to be enthusiastic about communicating that to them.
That's really important. I think being on the hiring side is that we really want to make sure that the candidates know themselves. Mm-hmm. You have to have good introspection of who you are and what you can contribute, where your deficits are, where your hopes and dreams are, and then communicating if the fit is great.
Yeah.
And be excited about it.
Yeah.
This is not a passive process.
Right.
So there's lots of opportunities. I'll make a comment that when I've I've been fortunate with, in my current role, I've hired over 40 people and on different specialties. But engaging people that know that they can make your program better, whether it's private, whether it's academic, is what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And that being responsive on that is key. Most importantly, though, is that you can be the greatest technical surgeon, but you got to be a good human being in the end. And that's sort of what drives me when I'm interviewing people, because their CVs say a lot, word of mouth says a lot, but if they're a good human being, that's something that's important. Not that we can teach that. So to summarize, this has been a fantastic discussion. I think all of us in the STS, this table, are extremely excited for those that are entering into the job market and the workforce. It's a great time for CT surgery, probably unique in the last 30 years, that this is probably actually amongst the best time to be a CT surgeon, to look for a job in CT surgery. And we've heard from these experts on how one should interact, look for the job, explore the job market, and be successful in that interview. Finding a niche and making sure that when you land a job, you've checked with your mentor and make sure when you have that first job, whether it be private or academic, that you also have a mentor to help guide you in that first formative 2 to 3 years. Well, thank you very much for this great discussion. And from the 55th annual meeting at the STS in San Diego, thank you for your attention.